Hello and welcome back to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast. I'm Luke Blattman, joined by Daniel Blattman, and we're back for 2024. We took a bit of a hiatus last year with the podcast. We all basically had life going on, so we just thought we'd park it for 2023. All good things were happening. Probably the only people that'd think we had bad things happening would be team managers, because it's the sort of stuff they think loses you a tenth or two per lap. But we're back and back into it for 2024, and we thought we'd start with a look at the 2024 TCR Australia Series. We'll start with a look back on the 2023 season, a year that really it came in for a lot of negative press, and some of it was certainly justified, particularly in grid sizes. But personally, I found it as a year that I think really compared to 2022, I personally thought that TCR sort of treaded water. There was definitely a lack of quantity in the cars, but there was no lack of quality in terms of the cars that were in the field, particularly in the sort of investment that we had with, obviously, at the back end of 2022, we had the new Hyundai join the field. Then 2023, we had the Lincoln Co. come in. Michael Clementi came in with the Cupra.
Yeah, it was the same. Like, do you know what I mean? On a surface level, if you just looked at the grid sizes, which kind of fluctuated that 13, 14, 15 cars pre the World Tour rounds, yeah, like it was disappointing. But for anyone that looked slightly below the surface of that, as you said, there were some, like, new brands. Lincoln Co. and the Cupra in particular was something really positive for the series, and as a fan, something you could really engage with, which was really positive. So that's what I was like. And the racing, like, we had lots of different winners, lots of different guys on the podium. No one ran away with it, which obviously showed into coming down to the last race. And sadly, obviously, that was set up through a DNF for Bailey Sweeney in the second last race. But yeah, as I said, like, from the Hondas to the Cupras, even the old Peugeots getting up there every now and then, it was, I found it a good season overall. And I'm sure we'll touch on this later and not going straight into it, but just that air of negativity from people outside the series, I found quite frustrating as it went on. People who weren't really invested in the series but just wanted to throw stuff from the sidelines, I found that overall pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it seemed like there were media reports every time, not even necessarily negative things. Like, if someone left ARG, there'd be a story up in 2 seconds about, you know, another person jumping off the ship, so to speak. But yet when it came to the race weekends, you'd get crickets out of the results.
Yeah, like, exactly. That was ridiculous. They wanted motorsport, well, supposedly motorsport journalists wanted to comment on TV production changes and generally front of office changes. But yeah, you're right. When it came to the domestic rounds, but also world touring car races on our shores, a lot of publications didn't even bother to send journos, so, like, to the track and report on Australian talents and world touring car champions from previous years racing on our shore. So yeah, that was that. Just I don't understand the motive behind that as well. Do you know what I mean? If I can understand if you're invested in the series and you're commenting on the good, the bad, and the ugly, but when you just cherry pick and jump in and hide the bad stuff and then hide when it comes to the racing, that did strike me as being quite odd.
Could have been as simple as just the low-hanging fruit. You know, it was easy to write negative stories on the TV deal and people leaving the company and blaming that on the TV deal and blaming the poor grids on the TV deal.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. There was, like, there's all merit to the things you've just, like, listed. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was openly a fan of the TV deal and the advantage of it, while acknowledging there were some limitations. But there was no one providing quite real, like a balanced kind of both sides of the coin. It was like, you're right, it was just everyone kind of just like jumping on the shoulders, trying to shake the thing down whilst, you know, not acknowledging some of the better stuff. And that's like, that's what I'm still trying to piece together. It's like, why does the TCR category in particular evoke, you know, so many of those kind of approaches? Whereas you look at the Strange GT Championship over the last 5 years, and do you know what I mean? That's had more of a roller coaster ride in grids and political infighting and management changes than TCR's had. But it seemed to escape the kind of shooting squad that we got to experience in 2023 when it came from the Australian media. So that found that fascinating. Even you look at the Utes, you look at Carrera Cup's history and things, and they haven't experienced it. So I don't know what it is about TCR that's wound people up or made enemies out of them. But yeah, especially when, you know, you've got the Rogers family, who are now predominant owners of ARG running the series, who I think were media darlings from their previous lives. So yeah, I don't really understand it, but hopefully 2024 provides an opportunity for that all to be a thing of the past. We had some great momentum off the World Tour races at the end of last year. New TV deal addressing some of the concerns from last year. So yeah, I'm really trying to support jumping into a fresh start for 2024, and I think there's some great storylines that everyone can get behind, hopefully.
Yeah, probably the most balanced media last year in terms of the Speed Series is probably Auto Action, because they would generally praise the classes and praise the racing, but then the alternative was they had a big thing about invisible race meetings, secret race meetings, and going on about how it's not their job to promote race meetings. But by the same token, surely if it's a big enough story for them to complain about secret race meetings, why not chase up why the race meetings are secret instead of just complain about it?
Exactly. And that whole premise is it's not your responsibility to promote them, but in the same breath, it's not your responsibility to tear them down. So I'm like, I don't understand with, they don't have to run marketing campaigns for it, but I'm like, all you're going to do is report on news that you think. So yeah, you're right. If it's newsworthy enough to tear it down, surely it's newsworthy enough to promote that it's upcoming. Yeah. They're like, not just Auto Action, but there are a number of publications that only decided to report on stuff like at midnight on that Friday night after the first TCR race, the World Tour race at Eastern Creek. And I was just like, John, I mean, you've kind of missed the boat. Like there was storylines, there was opportunities to promote that all week leading into it. And it was unbelievable. But then they want to turn around and say it's a secret meeting. So I didn't put any value or worth in those comments. And I don't know from your perspective, and obviously we follow the series, we follow the Speed Series, we follow Australian motorsport. Like, I saw plenty of information about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was all over social media. It was all over multiple pages that, you know, you follow if you're an Australian motorsport fan. Like, I don't understand the perception as a secret race meeting, but I thought the social media kind of pushing of it was pretty fair and pretty consistent in terms of the lead up to it. So yeah, it's definitely different, and there's always new ways to do things. But I didn't understand that the premise of the secret meeting attack.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's no secret. Crowds weren't great at a lot of the rounds, but that's nothing new. I mean, that goes right back to the Shannon's Nationals days. I mean, crowds have never been big. And I think, like I was saying, like, you know, write a story, do an investigation into why are they supposedly secret race meetings with no crowds. You know, get ARG people on the phone, write an article, ask them the hard questions.
Like, that's a great point. Engage them. And you know what I mean? Like, from what I've seen, Barry Rogers is more than happy to respond to questions when they're asked, and things like that. And I think Liam Kirkpatrick, who was running it for a while as well, is pretty open. So, yeah, rather than just have one-sided complaints or teardowns, yeah, you're 100% right. Why not engage the people and find out why? And do you know what I mean? I'm sure both sides could have learned something. So that's interesting. But it is funny too. Like I wasn't expecting a big crowd, but I was generally disappointed the Sydney Motorsport Park turnout, just because, you know, Under Lights is a good show. Like, it's a good show in the daylight there. But that Friday night, that qualifying session leading into that race, like that was a great show. And generally, I think, like, people are worse off for not being there trackside enjoying that, because that was a great spectacle. But yeah, I and going back to as well, I'm like, funnily enough, the Phillip Islands actually had, over the last 3 years, probably one just before COVID and then the two posts, like, they actually had some decent turnouts for crowds for the Speed Series as well. So it's not like it's not beyond them. It's
Queensland
just,
Raceway as well.
Yeah, Queensland Raceway had some great ones last year, obviously, with the investment that Tony Quinn's made too, that the place looks fresh and people are keen to go there. So I don't think it's, they have no following. And I don't know, about November at Sydney Motorsport Park in the evening is a great time to spectate. So anyways, we get a second crack at that in 2024, maybe with Speedway up and running by then and some drags, we might be able to put on a bit of a weekend festival of sport and get some collaboration across that, which would be really cool. But yeah, it's, I think, a massive opportunity that Australian motorsport can get behind, rather than this kind of nitpicking and, you know, protecting your mates out there.
It was a shame those sorts of matters we've just mentioned overshadowed, like you mentioned, was a pretty good championship battle where, you know, Bailey Sweeney was pretty dominant in terms of he had the most race wins, but Josh Buchan sort of played the long game to snatch the championship at the final round. But I mean, Aaron Cameron was in the fight the whole way. I mean, he went through a phase there where he had 5 second places in a row, and Tony D'Alberto managed to snatch second place at the final round in the championship. So it was a pity all that just got almost forgotten about in the constant whinging about the TV deal.
Agreed. Yeah, it kind of, like, you know, it made me think why people involved in, do you know what I mean, the industry, if they're more interested in, you know, the sideshow rather than actually what's happening on track. Because I agree. Like, Tony D'Alberto came home with a wet sail too. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, new car kind of helped too. But I thought that was a great run that he brought to the end of the season. At Bathurst, he was fast. So that was overall pretty good. Aaron Cameron, again, like, he was in the shout right at the end as well in race three. So we had lots of scenarios going on that, you're right, didn't get to be properly told or properly followed. That said, I was like, I do feel, for all the criticism that the stand coverage got, the on-air product was quite good. I thought, you know, the talking faces on the show told the stories, got to meet the drivers, you know, had some solid kind of narrative building there as well. So I thought there was, amongst some of those critiques, and as I said before, some are valid, some were not. But overall, I thought, there's some good strong elements to it as well that I hope get carried over as part of this 7-8 deal.
It's also worth mentioning that the old Alpha even got a win last year with Tom Oliphant at Winton, when he subbed back into the Alpha when they were waiting on parts for the Lincoln Co. That'd probably go down as the biggest surprise of the year in terms of a win. Maybe matched only by Will Brown winning the two World Tour rounds at Sydney Motorsport Park.
Yeah, and Barguana's pole too, probably.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree. I was someone who was expecting a little bit more of Tom Oliphant, looking at his British Touring Car form. So to see him get that win in the old car was actually a relief and a bit of a surprise. So even looking ahead, it'll be fascinating to see how he settles into the Hyundai in 2024.
It's funny, maybe the Lincoln Co is just a hard car to you know, for a new team to get their head around. It was interesting at Sydney Motorsport Park. He was running with sort of Buchan and Sweeney a lot of the time, in that sort of, particularly in the last race where there was that awesome fight.
Yeah, and that was like the fights within the fights there too, did get a little bit overshadowed, and I think he was finding a bit of form the longer it went, and as you said, that probably relates to the team. So I think a good litmus test will be this weekend with Dylan O'Keefe as well, just to see, you know, they're a bit settled. They hopefully they are able to get some data share from Cyan Racing at the World Tour races as well. That's, you know what I mean, just a bit of friendly support to really get that car. Because I agree, I don't think we saw it at its best in 2023. So there's, you know, hoping to see that car on the top of the podium a few more times this year.
I thought it was interesting. I felt a bit like the first five rounds of TCR Australia last year sort of hid behind the coming World Tour rounds at the end of the year, in as much as, in a way, it felt like maybe it was just due to the smaller grids that they were sort of almost marking time until they got to Eastern Creek. Maybe that was just because the main talking points weren't the racing, it was other factors. But when we got to the last two rounds, I was a bit worried that the Australian title had sort of get lost in the World Tour rounds. But if anything, the opposite happened. It sort of elevated the Australian title, because it was happening mid-pack of the World Tour events, and probably helped by the fact Will Brown won the first two races at Sydney Motorsport Park. It sort of put the emphasis on the Australian drivers and what was happening in the title. So I was a bit worried initially that, yeah, the Australian title would get sort of a bit lost. But I don't think that was the case. I think it turned out okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think everything was aimed at, yeah, the kind of, you know, the crescendo building up to the World Tour. And obviously, while grid numbers were on the smaller side as well, I think that having that influx of cars was, I mean, everyone was talking about, yeah, but we'll get to the World Tour and then we'll have more. So, which I do think played a bit of a disservice too. We had some great racing as well with the new winners and things. So I think those first five rounds were good in their own right, but yes, I think they were a little bit overshadowed by the incoming cloud of the World Tour. But yeah, I was really impressed how that World Tour two rounds came together, because I think it played both. Like, you know, the World Tour championship was unbelievably tight between those top three. I think they left Bathurst heading into their final round with like 5 points or something separating the top three. And then, yeah, you had the Australian series as well that's obviously got settled in that race three. So I think they complemented them quite well. And as I said earlier, the broadcast did a good job of pushing both those narratives together. One didn't cancel each other out, but both of them were put forward. So I think that was very well done.
And also, given it was sort of popular to have a crack at the Speed Series last year, it was ironic that it was basically the Australian TCR cars were the only wild cards, for want of a better word, to match the World Tour regulars all season. All through Europe, all through South America, it was usually all the World Tour cars at the front, then it was sort of your local guys, even in South America, which was a bit of a surprise. But then Australia, probably helped by the wet qualifying for Heat 1 at Eastern Creek, I mean, that mixed the grid up for the whole weekend, which some of the guys didn't really recover, particularly the Lincoln Cos. They never sort of were able to get out of the mid-pack. I mean, we were the only local cars who were able to match them.
Yeah, and wasn't it? Because I was the same thing. We walked in there on Friday afternoon kind of, you know, expecting, I thought, Eastern Creek, they're quite a European style track. I was like, oh, this is going to suit them, and we might not see which way they go, the Europeans versus the Australians. And obviously the practice times looked pretty dominant from, I think, the Lincoln Cos. One of them went 1-2-3. And same thing. But then, as you're right, when a bit of weather came in and then the Australian guys came to the fore, and I think the what Norby Mikulic in the Hyundai kind of went ice skating with some weird tyre setups. And you're right, it never quite recovered from that point. But Will Brown obviously took those two races, and then Rob Huff took the third. But it wasn't alone. Do you know what I mean? There was Aaron Cameron up there fighting, and obviously him and Fred Vavish came together at that turn one in race three. But yeah, like all the Aussies were in there mixing it as well. So that was really, really impressive. And yeah, you just look at the World Tour point scores behind the 10 regulars. And yeah, the fact that like Will Brown was next in line, and Aaron Cameron not too far behind as well. So I thought that was really impressive, and really, I don't say it needed credibility because it already had credibility, but for all the knocks the TCR guys had taken throughout the year, the fact that they really stood up to the world's best when it comes to those, and yeah, as you said, put a couple over them. So that was really strong, and I think if anything, it's really given some hype about this year's World Tour, which I think, and I think it was even Josh Buchan that was quoted as saying too, that he goes, you're gonna have guys potentially basically do the whole season waiting for the World Tour as well. Like there's that much anticipation now, which is something to really look forward to.
I mean, we were pretty happy with that World Tour weekend at Sydney Motorsport Park. That was a lot of fun. There wasn't many there, as we said, but probably the best weekend of motorsport we went to last year.
100%. I was like, it was, and sorry, both weekends too. Like you go look at, and we were quite fortunate, obviously living in New South Wales, we could attend both weekends of it. But I was like, under lights to start with at Eastern Creek was unreal. I thought the format of Friday night, Saturday night worked really well. You know, condensed schedule. You know, maybe the support act could have been tweaked a little bit, I think we're discussing. But in terms of, you had four Trans Am races and three TCR races. So that was pretty good to watch. But the access was unreal. Yeah, you could interact with drivers. You could see the cars on the grid. Yeah, there was so many positives about it. Europeans came in with open arms as well. There was no kind of standoffishness with them. And then obviously we went to Bathurst, and it was like, Jim, it was exactly the same. It was really open, really positive. All of them raced hard. I think that was one of the big things that surprised me, was the not so much just the intensity the Europeans had, but how the Australian guys lifted to match that intensity. Like they raced each other hard. No one took a backward step. And I think as well, it'd be fascinating to see this weekend at Sandown if that intensity level is carried on when it's just the Australian guys. Because I think they were very mindful of not being pushed around by the Europeans. So, and I shouldn't just say Europeans, because there's quite a few South Americans in that World Tour.
European-based, I'll say.
Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, so I think that's a real positive too, that hopefully that momentum is kept and that intensity is kept. And, more of the Australian TCR rounds can, kind of imitate and reflect the World Tour rounds.
Probably the best thing for me to come out of those World Tour rounds was I was able to be on the spot at turn two at Eastern Creek when the downpour happened in race one. And I managed to get all that, all the cars going off at turn two on video.
Yeah, and you got a few hits out of that too, didn't you?
I did. It was good, although I heard it mentioned around social media that we dubbed Mark Scaife's voice from Homebush 2010 on our video.
Slanderous, isn't it?
I know. Well, especially as what I said on the video wasn't exactly what Scaife said, but no, we don't do any dubbing in case Supercars was thinking of hitting us up for copyright infringement for using their sound, but unfortunately, I did use Mark Scaife's inspired quote when I said, oh, he's off, they're all off. but it was all me. There was no dubbing. That was just lucky to be on the spot there at turn two. On to Bathurst, though, and the final round. There were calls after that event that, along the lines that the International was a waste of a Bathurst event. particularly from Mark Fogarty said that on his podcast, which I thought was a bit unfair. Well, look, there definitely wasn't a big crowd. It was a very small crowd, but the crowd was the equivalent of what the Bathurst 12-hour was getting in 2013. And we've seen how far that one came. And how many people go to the Bathurst 6-hour? I wouldn't imagine a lot more.
I think you're 100% right there, Luke, because right there, two prime examples where people have selective outrage. So it's like, why are they so concerned about a waste of a Bathurst event when, yeah, there was no calls for the 12-hour to be squashed and removed off in 2011, 12, 13, even 14 wasn't that big, the 6-hour. I find that call absolutely ridiculous. And as well, who's lining up for another Bathurst weekend? Like, what's it taking away from? Do you know what I mean? Like, you've got... in 2024, it's going to have world championship status. So you've got world touring cars on Australian shores, international drivers, an Australian touring car series. So I was like, you've got so-called journalists sitting there being more worried about who's on the grass mounds rather than what's happening on the racetrack. So I just feel like the priorities are completely the wrong way around. And for what purpose? Yeah, like, I wonder, do they say the same things about Bathurst V8 500 that's going to come up in a few weeks' time, when it's going to be like, well, isn't that a waste of it? Like, do you know what I mean? Why do they need to race it twice? And what's the sport getting out of it? But I bet you we don't see any of those articles.
Nah. It'll be how great it is that the supercars are back.
Yeah, and so that's why I question the motivation or the agenda behind it, because it's just it doesn't quite add up. And I was going to say, so I would have thought, yeah, the prospect of seeing a world championship event with international drivers intertwined with Australian drivers and teams is something to celebrate. But it appears some sections don't want to do that. Which is in my case, that's more of a waste than a potential weekend at Bathurst that it's taking up.
So. One thing that did disappoint me a little bit actually at the international was the fact, compared to 2022, they shortened the TCR races by 10 laps.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, until you told me, when I got the schedule, I was like, okay, cool, yep, same as 2022. And then when you were like, yeah, it's 10 laps shorter, that was, I was kind of like, yeah. And especially, was it race three in particular with the safety cars? Like, that was a disappointing way to churn out any weekend, but particularly a championship deciding weekend. So, hopefully there's some way that can be rectified.
I can only imagine they dropped it back to 11 laps to fall in with the... TCR World Tour, because it equates to around about half an hour, 11 laps. I don't know, maybe the Lincoln Cos have only got big enough tanks to go 30 minutes. I don't know. But or to do with TV times or something, or international TV times, I don't know. But I just thought it was a shame. You know, that last race of 2022 was the race of the season, really. And
And
it was the longer distance that helped it.
Yeah, it's in those quiet moments, I still think of that Will Brown pass, two wheels on the grass in the chase. That's that was wild. But I was like, that's by extending those, you're just creating more value. And, you know what I mean, these guys have traveled halfway around the world, unless there is some requirement from World Tour crowd, but still, I'd like to think, provided the cars can do it, that, as you said, the Lincoln Cos, because clearly the rest of the field can, because they didn't in 2022. But that was really good. So I'm all for the extended races, because they were 21 laps.
Yeah,
three 21 lappers in 2002. Yeah,
around about 50 odd minutes, I think, was the allotted time for them. So
yep.
Not that Bailey Sweeney wouldn't have been a great champion for the class, but I think Josh Buchan's shown himself to be a very good advocate for the class. You know, when he was crowned champion, first thing he did was say he was coming back next year. So,
yeah, I think he's somewhat a big advocate for TCR racing, but also a great story. Do you know what I mean? How he's kind of, how his career's kind of gone, and he's scrapped, and he's found himself a great partnership there with Hyundai, and it's led here. So, I read something during the week that he basically said he was here for as long as they'll keep letting him drive it. So that was really good. And, I was an Australian champion too. I'd love for an opportunity for him and some of the other guys to do a bit of Ben Barguana from last year and, yeah, have a crack at a few more overseas races as part of that championship. Because I think it's great for the Australian champion then to go and, you know, race in this series further field. And again, that's one of the things that they need to leverage, because it sets this category apart from, you know, majority of other categories in the country, maybe apart from Australian GT too, where you can career cup, where you can go and race in international series. So I think that'd be cool. But big Josh Buchan fan, and ever since you snapped that video of him going around the outside 2021 at Eastern Creek off the start, was it off the start or was it whatever lap it was? I just remember you got that great video.
It was end of lap one or end of lap two. Yeah, outside of John Martin at turn one.
Yeah, that was very impressive. I liked him then, and obviously how he's kicked on from then as well. So,
yeah, he was very complimentary when I put that video up on the Motor Racing Passion Facebook page as well. Back in 2022, I think I put it up.
Yeah.
I think he was very, very pleased to see his handiwork on film.
Yeah, well, it was a great move. Yeah, that's fully committed. And yeah, I was going to say, at the end of lap one too, when the rear tyres aren't up to temperature in a front drive car too, throwing that thing into turn one took some guts.
In the off season, we had there was quite a popular article put up by Velocity magazine about sort of, you know, where they felt TCR stood in Australian racing and the problems with it, also the positives with it. If you want to have a look at the full article, go to the Velocity magazine Facebook page and scroll down a little bit. You'll be able to find it. It was posted on December 24. What were your main takeaways from that article? It was quite balanced and quite good, really.
Yeah, and a lot of effort went into it too. Like, that was it. Very lengthy and detailed approach. And that's what I like. The people who wrote that article, I didn't see it attributed to a particular author outside of just the Velocity magazine. And same thing. I was like, it was one of the more balanced approaches or, you know, critiques that I found of that I'd read regarding the TCR category in the country. That, do you know what I mean? For every critique, there was an offer of an idea or a potential solution, rather than some of the other commentary that was just, you know, bagging it for the sake of bagging it kind of thing. So that was the big one. But I guess the takeaways were, it's a couple of things that raised around clearly defining like what the category was. Was it kind of like a you know, targeting youth versus gentleman drivers type of thing? And they quoted Mr. Lottie from the TCR World Tour as well, being clear and adamant that his vision or view of TCR category was that it was a youth-focused talent development one. And so I was like, well, that's quite a good thing, because it's like, in terms of, I think having a clear direction for who you're targeting and why you're targeting, obviously, there are those licensing issues that is surrounding, multiple categories in the country too, that needs to be addressed separate to this. And I think if I've read correctly, that there's been some gains in that in the last couple of weeks. That was a good point to raise, just how that category is positioned and how management is, you know, looking to acquire new teams and drivers. And then the second one too was obviously the current teams getting together and, not trying to develop something like a Tiga or something from back in the day, but at least the teams and the drivers trying to, you know, help and form a committee that can actually push some ideas up to the management and power brokers. So once again, I thought they were really positive kind of solutions focused approaches to it. So yeah, I actually enjoyed reading that article and, you know, acknowledged all the limitations that it raised, but obviously put it towards finding solutions. And I think the major one, which was kind of from that article that the author there put up at the start and the end, was that it was like, everyone needs to be in, like everyone needs to be in or everyone needs to be out. There's no point, you know, ARG pushing something, but the team's not, and vice versa. So it's kind of like everyone's responsible for their own little bits here to make this successful. So I thought that was overall pretty good messaging and a pretty good take heading into the 2024 season. And the article raised too about prize money, which, to be fair, I didn't realize there was that much prize money in 2019 to get it off the ground. But again, TCR is not the only category in Australia that doesn't provide prize money. Like, yeah. Say it's the ones that do provide actual prize money are quite rare or few and far between. So again, it's a worthy acknowledgement, but I also don't think that's the that's the difference at this stage.
Especially as, you know, prize money is great and awesome, and if it can be offered, offer it. But you're a very brave team to budget prize money into your budget for the year, because top placings aren't guaranteed.
No, definitely not. That's and it is something not like, you know what I mean, at the top of it. Do you remember when F3 had I forgot the investment firm.
Opus Prime.
Opus Prime, yeah. They jumped in and tipped some money. And I think they were going to pay $100,000 or something to win the series. And that did have a little uptick in entries. So, like, there is proven there. But obviously, there was no money behind that promise. So, yeah. Story for another podcast. But
probably the two things that stuck out for me from the article were the mention that at the end of last year, Motorsport Australia, now that they've sort of basically taken back control of the Speed Series, that they told TCR that they were losing their headline status, and sort of the headline act, all the meetings was going to be shared around between different classes. Your thoughts on that? Because I mean, it was treated as an important class, and it definitely headlined the World Tour events at the end of last year. But I never really felt like that. You know, the whole show is called the Speed Series. It's not promoted as the TCR Australia Series with supports.
Yeah. No, like I to be honest, I didn't know that. Like, you can see on the scheduling, obviously it was. So it'll be fascinating to see how those the schedules look. Obviously, this weekend in Sandown, it's still TCR and Trans Am focused, so there's no real change. So you can see how that evolves throughout the year, but yeah, that was quite surprising to read that as well. And then, but I think that also does show as well that Motorsport Australia taking on more of that those reins, they do need to be a bit more how do you say it? It's kind of like member focus. So like, yeah. Or dare I say it, I'm a socialist in terms of providing opportunities for everyone. So yeah, I think that's where that comes from. But I don't see that being a major issue one way or another.
Yeah. If you go back through our podcast on the Speed Series and TCR in the past, you'll see, yeah, I still think you need to pick and stick with a headline act. But that's an old... that's an old chestnut of mine. the other thing that interested me was the mention that there's a shortage of some of the latest TCR cars. Like it specifically mentions the new Hyundai and the Lincoln Co. and inferred that people had tried to get them into Australia, but basically there's not enough around.
Yeah, now that's what concerned me. Like, is it a production issue, or is it, do you know what I mean? Is it just getting, is that like a distribution, you know, shipping type of hold up?
I mean, and it's not that I don't believe the article, but I mean, if that's true, then that is a category shooting itself in the foot.
Mm.
Like, and there's nothing, it renders a lot of the other criticisms. I mean, you can't have that. If people can't get new cars, you can't just keep rolling out the same cars.
Well, exactly.
So it'll end up like the Australian Super Touring Championship in 2002.
Yeah. And as we said before too, it comes down to like positioning. So like, how do you position your category for, you know, up and coming, or, you know, race against the world and stuff. And then people are invested in that and they can't get a car.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think at least there's one thing. It shouldn't be too much drama getting a Peugeot going forward.
No.
Once they get them built.
And again, that's another strength as well. The fact that we're potentially going to have, well, not potentially, we are going to have cars developed in this country, like in the country. So, yeah, I think that's a definite plus. And that, hope, not that you want to see a Peugeot Cup, but that's
Peugeots will become to TCR Australia what BMWs were to the Australian Super Touring Championship,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Holden Commodores were in Group A touring cars in Australia. It'll just be the sort of the go-to car for anyone who wants a new one.
Yeah. But a great, like, good on JRM for getting that contract. And I just hope that they come out fast as well,
yeah,
and well sorted. Because I think, yeah, as, again, well, obviously you got four lined up in the series for this year. So, and I think they were saying round three or round four. So if those cars can hit the ground running, they're reliable, they're quick, then that's going to be great for the local scene. And hopefully as well, some internationals pick them up as well, because I was disappointed. I know the car was slightly older, but the fact that there wasn't, Peugeot weren't supporting that, the World Tour. So hopefully with a new car, that might be something. You never know, they could be GRMs.
Yeah. So obviously the big news pretty much straight off the back end of the Bathurst International was that the Stan TV deal had ended at the end of 2023, and from 2024, the TV deal was mainly 7 Plus free to wear with a bit of 7 Mate coverage. By chance, we were on the spot under the podium when the Stan team all signed off in front of the cameras at the end of last season, and well, that was it. We were right behind the camera when they signed off. But,
and it wasn't announced, but you could feel it too, wasn't it? Yeah, the sign off was very much like this is it.
Yeah, it was a poorly kept secret. What are your thoughts on the series going back to 7? Because I was very anti the Stan deal originally. If you go back and listen to our review of the round 1 and round 2 2022 of TCR Australia, I when I went back and listened to it in preparation for this podcast, I didn't realize how hard I went on the TV deal. But I'd sort of, I guess I've grown into it over the last 2 years, and it's effectively, it just feels like sort of two wasted years. I mean, maybe Stan didn't want it after 2 years, but it's a pity something couldn't have been worked out to increase maybe the 9 gem component or something alongside Stan, but maybe Stan didn't want it. But, you know, what are your thoughts on going back to 7?
Yeah, I'm pretty, obviously we're in the fortunate position. We had Stan, so that wasn't there necessarily the challenge for us, but also we jumped on board Stan because, like, you weren't getting it just for the Speed Series. You're getting it for the Indy cars. You're getting it for the World Endurance Championship. You're getting it for the WRC. Do you know what I mean? And obviously some European football and tennis. And do you know what I mean? Like, overall, it's a good package. So obviously, taking that aside, that we were in a position where we could have it, like, the coverage was great.
Yeah.
You know, the access was great. I didn't have a problem with it. It gave a more tailored product for the series than what they previously had on SBS and things like that. So, but that aside, obviously the feedback from both competitors and fans suggested that they wanted a free, like a larger free to wear component. Ironically, a lot of the people complaining about that, I'm pretty sure, didn't take advantage of the 9 gem Saturday coverage of all the Speed Series rounds. I forget it was, but someone made a good point too, that in 2022 and 23, TCR and the other Speed Series main products, Trans Am and S5000, had more free-to-air races than a Carrera Cup, a Super 2, and things like that. So, like, once again, that whole, those facts got lost in the overall narrative, because just for whatever reason, people picked on this and decided it was time to stick the heel into it. But moving aside now, we are with Channel 7, and from what they've put forward, I can't fault it. Do you know what I mean? It's on, obviously, the streaming platform of it, and as well, there's also reduced or selective coverage on 7Mate. So, it's hard to fault it. I would have been happy if it stayed on Stan, but they've taken the feedback on board. They've listened to it. They've implemented something. So now it's on the teams, who basically said they wanted free-to-air coverage to leverage sponsorship, to follow that through and, you know, support it and put cars on track. And B, for all the fans that said that, you know, they'll blocked out through the Stan deal, well, now it's time to, you know, tune in to Channel 7, watch it, and let's hopefully it all comes off, and we can see grids grow and more TV ratings improve. So it's like, overall for me, it's a net gain kind of thing. There's nothing to lose from moving to this Channel 7 deal. So overall, a good thing.
You watch, though, the same people who whinged about it being on Stan or whinge because there's ads now.
No, exactly. That's a given. And that's where I'm more inclined to just prioritize for now the entrant feedback. And yeah. Gentlemen, if they're feeling like there's positive experiences, then just run, like, let's just run with that, because I think that's where the value is at the moment. So, but yeah, like, it's very much shown that people are just going to complain for the sake of it when it comes to these things. And, you know, ads are the worst, but then on the flip side, they don't want to pay for no ads. So, like, I'm not exactly sure where the where the middle ground is there. What are your thoughts on it?
When it was first announced, there was a big emphasis put on 7+ in the initial announcement. So on the surface, I was like, a lot of people were saying, oh, it's just back to how it was in 2021. But in 2021, there was a heavy emphasis on 7Mate.
Yep.
And 7+ was sort of the add-on part, whereas it seemed like 7+ was going to be the main bit. But if you look at it for this weekend, TCR particularly, all their races are on 7Mate. It's all easy to watch. It's free to wear, which is what everyone was after. This is the only part that maybe worries me in a way, is that it'd be good if Channel 7 has a lot of properties now in motorsport. They've obviously got the Supercars Championship. They've got the Speed Series. They've got the Australian Rally Championship. They do a bit of drag racing. They've been doing Speedway.
Mm.
It'd be good if that could be linked in some way. And I think the best way to do that is some common broadcasters. I fear that's not going to happen, because obviously you've got individual production companies doing a lot of this stuff. But, you know, if the Supercars events that they cover, the Speed Series events, even the Rally Championship, if you get, say, Mark Barretta fronting all of those, there's a common link. There's a common face to 7 Motorsport. There is a hosting chair up for grabs now in the Australian Rally Championship, now that Jess Dane's left.
Very good point, yes.
So, or, you know, Jack Perkins is a big part of their Supercars coverage. Make him a part of the Speed Series coverage. Just some way to link it all together.
Yeah, but yeah, have some continuity, yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily going to happen, because that was one thing about their 2021 coverage. Mark Barretta was on a lot of them.
So, yes, yeah. Have some continuity. So
we'll wait and see, but I think that's a way of helping. Well, you know, it'll help the Speed Series more than it'll help, say, Supercars. But,
yep.
You know, even get Dean Herridge into the
Well, I was going to say the fact that he does the Australian Rally Championship and he was on the Shannon's
the Trophy Series coverage.
Yeah, last year as well. I was like, yeah, that probably checks out.
One thing though is on Stan, all the 2022 and 2023 Speed Series events have been completely taken down.
Yes. Yep.
So you can't go back and watch them outside of they've still got the World Tour events up, but yep. They're just the TCR races. So where do you watch your old TCR races now? Like have they just disappeared into the other? Are the 2021 races gonna pop up now on 7+? Or do ARG own the rights to the TV coverage of 22 and 23 or
No, great question. One I think we can throw it. The ARG guys, because yeah, you'd like to hope they're not being just held by. I'm pretty sure ARG, because they contracted the production arm and things like that too. I'm not 100% sure, but my interpretation of it was a bit like the V8 one, where too they retain the actual vision and the broadcaster, and potentially that's why the World Tour races were separate to that. Do you know what I mean? Like while they're still being shown there too, because that would have been a different deal with the World Tour. So yeah, no, that'll be interesting to see it comes out. But yeah, no, we should pose the question at them too, because that'd be great. Something if they cannot, even if they just put on YouTube, like, you know, if Channel 7 aren't interested in uploading all that content, like as an archive type thing, if they can just put that on YouTube, that'd be awesome.
Well, I think they will be, because one of the good things about 7+ is they've got a lot of good motorsport content on there. Yeah. A couple of years ago before Bathurst, I mean, they uploaded something I'd never seen before, the highlights of the 1963 Bathurst 500.
Mm.
That was, I think, something everyone thought it was long gone. But also they've got a channel in there called Rally Retro, and it's got Australian Rally Championship events going right back to the 90s, stuff that was shown on Channel 10. And then even into the late 90s and early 2000s, it's got all the Channel 10 covered events on 7+.
Yeah, really?
So,
okay.
So they're, you know, from that aspect, when it comes to the rallying, they're willing to put that up. So it'd be, at the very least, if we could get the 2021 to 23 races up. The 2019 races may fall under sort of the Speed Week SBS sort of ownership.
Yep.
So, yeah, but it'd be a shame if those telecasts are lost, because...
Yeah, I agree. And do you know what I mean? There's no commercial gain for people to try and hide them back, right? So, and you're right, I'd love to go and watch some of those races. And as we've touched on before, I usually watch that race three from the 2022 Bathurst International, just for that pass in the grass. So, yeah, it'd be good if we can maintain that.
So on to the entry list for this weekend, round one at Sandown, 15 cars, which I think is pretty good given where we came from last year and given the few dropouts we've had over summer.
Yeah, I was hoping, you know, in a perfect world, I was hoping for more, because where I'd like to see this get to, we get a consistently 20 cars. Like, I think that's a good package and product from them to put forward. But you're right, when I was kind of doing the math and I got really excited by a couple of announcements early on, and then you were a wise head and you just said, well, it's not a new car, that's just taking someone else's car. So the second Suter Audi, you're quick to point out that looks like it was Will Brown's car or from the MPC stable. So so yeah, it was overall, I think 15 is, with all the changes and all the uncertainty around it, I think it's an okay place to start. It needs to grow as the season goes on, and I'm confident that it will, but as you go through that list, though, it is a good depth of talent in that list. So, and I think that's the important part. If it was 15 cars, all with, you know, week to week deals attached to them and things like that, I have a bit more concern. But I mean, you look at the Wall Racing stable there. Obviously, you've got two new Civics as well. It was a Brad Harris that stepped up into Girolami's car that he raced at the World Tour last year. You've got obviously D'Alberto coming back with support from Honda, which is unreal. We've seen obviously the HMO team. I can't fault them. Obviously, absolutely devastated for Bailey Sweeney and the fact that he's not there. But fingers crossed, some budget gets sorted out and he can rejoin the field, hopefully with HMO, because I'd love to see that partnership continue. Clay Richards in the Cupra. So for starters, when we should acknowledge too that obviously Michael Clementi made a release there saying that he, due to budget constraints, won't at this stage be joining the TCR Australia field for Sandown weekend and obviously for the short-term future. But that was tempered with the fact that the Cupra remains on the grid, prepared by MPC and driven by Clay Richards, which I think I'm really excited by that. He's a good young talent. Obviously, there's some benefits with the continuation of the Richards name with Touring Car Racing in Australia. Gentlemen, we've kind of got that Barguana Richards, you know, heritage that I think's really good for the series. You got four strong Peugeots through GRM. Jordan Cox, like obviously, until the new Peugeot comes on board, I think, you know, it's going to be hard those guys to week in, week out, be at the front of the field. But that said, I think he's due for all his talents. His TCR Australia campaigns have been a little bit hot and cold in that sense. And, do you know what I mean, whether it's reliability or incidents on track. But I'd love to see him really put a season together this year. And equally, Aaron Cameron, he really impressed me with those World Tour rounds last year as well. So I think once we get that new Peugeot, and it might be, this is what concerns me, it might be too late in the season to have a proper crack. But if those guys can just accumulate points, hang in there, then they can really go big when the new car comes on tap. So that's exciting for me. And then finally, obviously, today's news that the Lincoln Co. with ASM running that, I think it's an important part. So as we said before, 15 cars, but we've got diverse brands, new interesting cars. And I think Dylan O'Keefe as well should be able to pedal that pretty well, and we can see what potential it can get to.
Yeah, he'll be quick, definitely, Dylan O'Keefe. It was hard to decipher from the press release of O'Keefe's and also Clay Richards whether they're in for the season or they're just in for Sandown at the moment.
I did get the feeling, particularly with O'Keefe's, that at the moment it is very much a this weekend one, which is a bit disappointing, but, you know, in the same breath too, maybe there's something on the horizon which could be a little bit better again. So, yeah, but we'll take it for now. I think he will be able to pedal it though. So that's what I'm excited. I'm keen to see how that Lincoln Co. goes and what performance they can get out of it. Because he's had a test too, which is good. So they're not going in blind. Whereas Clay Richards, I think he's going in blind with this weekend with the Cupra.
Makes you wonder how late the Oliphant team change came about.
Agreed, yeah. Because there was a two-year deal announced for Oliphant and ASM. Well, ironically too, Bally Sweeney's website up a couple of days ago said that 2024 he was driving the Hyundai. So, so it's obviously there's been, I don't know what was the catalyst for it, but yeah, there's obviously been some movements. So, I think the important thing is we should get those guys back on track if we can.
It was interesting to read today that Buchan will be in a hatch this weekend because there's been some mechanical dramas with the I-30 sedan, which he won the championship with last year. So, I don't know, do you wonder if this links back to that Velocity article where maybe it's hard to get parts as well as cars?
Yeah, it could be because I didn't realize that too until I think it was the press release that had the number one in their livery, and I was like, "Hang on, what's he doing in the hatch?" But that surprised me as well though, because you're like, obviously the World Tour Squadra Corsa Hyundai team, obviously there's good links with that. They've been here, so they're producing access to quite good parts. Hyundai is involved as a factory component of that bucket entry. They're supportive of HMO. Yeah, it's just wild that even they're struggling for gear. So it's a little bit surprising, to be honest. So.
One of the good entries this weekend is Marcus Liddell in the Audi. And I think TCR Australia really needs to promote what he's doing, because one of the things we mentioned earlier about the quantity of the 2023 field and how obviously there was investment in brand new cars coming in. The problem was nobody was picking up the old cars they were replacing and running with them. Like, we've got a lot of Alphas sitting around. There's Volkswagen Golfs. There's a couple of the older model Audis. For instance, Lachlan Manif's team has not running this year. They pulled out last year. They were running the old model Audi. We need to, now that Liddell's come in with the 99 Motorsport team, and he openly has said he wants to put young guys in the car, TCR Australia needs to really promote what he's doing. Because
Yeah,
like what because why aren't people getting in the older cars?
agreed. And I think too, like he's, obviously he's driving this weekend, but he's very much said that, yeah, that's what he wants to do. And I do think as well, once we get this season started too, like as I said, in the new TV deal, if that is a hindrance in terms of, helping these guys get budgets together or finalize budgets to do this. Hopefully that's a little bit helpful with it. But yeah, I agree. I think his approach has been really, really refreshing. And the fact that he wants to promote talent, he's got two cars at the disposal. So yeah, I agree. I think it'd be great if TCR can get behind him and obviously yes, yeah, some talented young drivers want to put their hands up.
What do you think of the calendar for this year? We're starting at Sandown, 7-round series. I think Sandown's a great place to start the season. If you're not having a Sandown 500, have your opening round there, I think. I think it's a great place to hold the first round. It's very early in the year, though. I did wonder when the calendar got announced. I thought that given we didn't finish till sort of the middle weekend of November last year, it wasn't a lot of time before round one, and I'm assuming they wouldn't have set the calendar without speaking to the teams. But I just thought it was a very short off season, especially when you look at the gap between round five and round six is longer than the off season between the last round of last year and the first round this year.
Agreed. Like I, and especially this part of February now is a pretty packed start. Like, I mean, so you've got the opening round this weekend, you've got the 12-hour next weekend, you've got the following weekend, the 500, unrelated. You've also got the World Superbikes in Phillip Island, which will be taking my interest. But yeah, it's a very condensed part of the calendar. So I am very interested to know why this date was picked, and do you know what I mean? Yeah, why we couldn't have started in March, or again just started in with Tasmania in March and thrown Sandown in that gap, because yeah, from when Queensland Raceway round five to the World Tour round in November, yeah, like yeah, just slotting Sandown in September, and or August, whatever you like. I think that would have provided a more balanced one. March and November, a bit more of an off season. I think in an ideal world that makes sense to me. But then there might be some reasons for this that is clearer. But I think a great spread between some of the best circuits in the country. Visiting South Australia, visiting Queensland, visiting New South Wales, visiting Tassie. So obviously if you're in WA, you're probably not thrilled, but outside of that, some great national coverage, some great circuits. So yeah, I think overall, I think it's a great calendar. in terms of the coverage, take the timing critique on board. But yeah, I enjoyed the tracks, and I think we'll be getting to two of them this year. So that's can't wait. Just the problem is it's in November.
Yeah, we'll have to go on a holiday.
Yeah. I was even as we're chatting there, I was even thinking. I was like, well, yeah, can we get to Phillip Island in April? What are your thoughts on the calendar?
Yeah, I like it. I think, yeah, I like Sandown being the first round. I think it's always had some pretty good racing and, you know, close to Melbourne. Maybe the thoughts were they might be able to get perhaps bigger grids to open the series in Victoria compared to getting people to make the trip down to Tasmania for the first round. That's all that, yeah, but that's just a general thought. I don't mind how they're spaced sort of once a month until round six. I mean, you could put another round in there. That'd be eight rounds. There's a reason they're at seven rounds, I guess. I guess this is where if there has been a bit of a team sort of group formed, maybe they've said sort of seven rounds is their limit. But you'd hope you could build it up.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that should be planned. But and as we said before, obviously this is a bit of a consolidation year. I think this year goes well. I do think there's merit to, you know, move to an eight round series. So because especially when the speed series more general, I think has 10 rounds if my memory serves. So yeah, so I think there is opportunities for growth there.
And obviously not every category that's part of the speed series goes to every round. Sort of every category is doing an average probably about seven rounds. So I was thinking about this today in terms of the supercars calendar alongside the speed series calendar. Supercars only doing 12 events. If you did one series, you're going to probably then do seven speed series rounds. There really is the option there for the possibility to have double duty.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
If the teams will allow it. And to be fair, teams have. Well, look at Triple Eight. They've got their GT program. So guys like Brock Feeney and Will Brown will be regulars in the GT championship. You know, we've seen Mostert do double duty, doing the TCR as well as supercars. Obviously, Will Brown the last 2 years. So there's not that many doing it. There's a few guys doing Trans Am, obviously. You've got Tim Slade, James Golding, now Todd Hazelwood. Yep. That wasn't his original intention, though, doing Trans Am as well as supercars. So there's the possibility. If people want to race more, there's the availability for them to race more.
Yeah, and that's right. So that that Trans Am grid is highly appetizing.
Yeah, only 16, though, and there were calls last year that, you know, Trans Am should be made the premier series of the Speed Series, but their grid, quality, fantastic. It's going to be awesome, but, you know, it's only 16 cars compared to 15 TCR cars.
Yeah, so they're similar. But, yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree in terms of, once again, which I'm interested as well, too, because Trans Am were equally critical of the TV deal and things like that. So you've got your free-to-air now. So I just wonder where a lot of those entries are, whether people are entering them at combined sedans at the 12-hour support or or what. But yeah, so hopefully it's that great. But yeah, just looking at the entries in that, I was like, I was quite impressed.
Your thoughts on the Bend replacing Winton?
I quite enjoy Winton as a racetrack, and I think it suits TCR cars and that. But I do like the fact that would have been three Victorian rounds. So I think moving one from a TCR perspective to South Australia and a different market, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah,
from that sense as well. Yeah, like Winton, and yeah, would have gladly viewed that, but yeah, I think for balance as a national championship, I think that's a good decision.
I noticed it was also announced this week that the Australian Manufacturers Championship is going to be awarded to the winning manufacturer of the TCR Australia Championship.
Yeah, which is fascinating. I think it's a great move, and hopefully that helps with, you know, manufacturers and dealers getting on board, like the likes of Honda and Hyundai, Peugeot, etc. So, but yeah, I thought that was a cool addition too, and again highlights a strength of this category where there is direct, you know, manufacturer benefit.
I think they just need to make it known what it is. They need to promote that they're awarding this title.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
I mean, it comes back to my old, same old complaint about the name of the series. Like, so we're now, it's the Super Cheap Auto TCR Australia series, but they're also awarding the Australian Manufacturers Championship.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but so, you can run the two parallel. Like,
oh, you can. You can. But I still argue that, you know, TCR as a name doesn't mean anything. I still think from years ago they should call it the Super Cheap Auto Touring Car Series, because people still know what a touring car is. They can get an idea of what it is. But now we're throwing Speed Series as well as Australian Manufacturers. I just find there's too many layers to everything.
Well, yeah, but I think the Speed Series aspect though is different. Because that is the overall show, as opposed to the individual categories.
Which
we're not going to get away from.
No, but my issue with that is like, what is the Speed Series? Because there's different categories at each round.
Yes.
So, if you're trying to explain to someone what is the Speed Series, it's the same problem the Shannon's Nationals had.
But is it a problem? Like, do you know what I mean? I think Speed Series is 10 categories. It's like, do you know what I mean? It's the strength is the collective, not necessarily the individual ones.
But has it proven to be a strength, given the crowd sizes?
Well, no, but I think even if you flip it, I don't see that changing. Do you know what I mean? Like, say you just called it the Super Cheap TCR Australia Championship. I don't think that's automatically going to flip it, or whoever the sponsor is, Trans Am Series or Australian Formula 3, whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, the Fanatec Australian GT3 Championship. Like, I don't think that changes.
Maybe not, but at least it gives you something to, if you advertise it, people know what it is.
Yeah, but I was going to say too, I think the categories do advertise them individually. Do you know what I mean? It's just, like, I think the way it's structured with Motorsport Australia now effectively the promoter, well, they are the promoter. Yeah, I don't think you can get away from Speed Series or Shannon's Nationals or whatever. It's because they can't or won't put all of it behind one category, especially after the Formula Ford.
Yeah. I don't know. I thought, given out of the 10 Speed Series round, I think if you had a look at, there's at least TCR and Australian GT at all of them, just about, I think. So you could sort of make them your two sort of headlines. But that's just me. I've been going on about the same thing for 10 years. And I still keep watching. one other thing on sort of general Speed Series, in terms of, you know, costs, which are always a big thing, and particularly in light of where we've come out of with the stand deal, would they ever consider cutting back to one-day race meetings?
You mean the Speed Series in general or the categories?
The events, the Speed Series events, like practice qualify on the Saturday, all the races are just on Sunday.
Oh, so it's still a two-day event.
Two-day event, but sorry, one day of racing.
So what would be the benefit of that?
Well, they could turn up a day later. There'd be a day less of track time.
Yeah. My only thing is that when they did that in the past, remember the years ago, the Shannon Nationals had that on Saturday, Sunday, but then people wanted practice sessions, so they ran like private practice on the Friday.
Yeah.
And then the majority of people turned up for private practice. So it was kind of like, well, let's just run it as a 3-day meeting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the other challenge is too, it's like, can you physically fit everything in?
Well, you'd have to knock a race off everyone.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I think now in the, if when people are at the track, you almost want to maximize their track time, not limit it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where I was like, I don't see the 3-day meeting being a limiting factor at the moment. From a purely spectator point of view too, there's some merits or some cost cutting type things. But at the moment, and I'm like, I might be completely off track, but I just haven't heard anything to say that a 3-day meeting versus a 2-day meeting is the difference between getting cars on track.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I can agree with that. I suppose also I'm looking at it from a TV point of view in that it's hard to find that many hours across a weekend.
Especially yeah.
to watch it all.
Also, all the people keep asking, like, why isn't Friday practice being broadcast? I was like, who is going to sit there and what? Like, don't get me wrong. If it's on, it's on. You might flick it on. But I was like, I don't know who cares that genuinely about watching practice.
No.
Yeah, that's what. But you go on all the things and people are like, well, why aren't you showing Friday practice? I strongly disagree with that.
No, it's honestly, I wouldn't even care if qualifying didn't get shown.
Well, sometimes I might agree with you in that sense, but then after the Eastern Creek World Tour qualifying last year,
that was it.
But for the most part, I agree. It's like, yeah, you're keen to watch racing, and let's prioritize that.
What are your general thoughts like with the Speed Series in general going into this year, now under Motorsport Australia control? What do you see happening?
Yeah, no, well, again, I think it's a consolidation year. So, but I think they've got a good package, like they've had for the last number of, you know, 5-6 years type of thing. Like, Benetech GT World Challenge are committed. GT4 obviously had the same kind of shipping issues with cars and things this weekend. So that is a major disappointment. And obviously you can see that in the schedule. There's a few holes that they've had to try and work around this weekend. But then you've got obviously the Open Wheel Series, the All-In Open Wheel Series. You've got the Porsches. You know, hopefully, well, whether they just go into that All-In Open Wheel Series, but you've got S5000 that's on the sidelines, but with enough entries, they'll reopen it, TCR. So, yeah, I'm like, I see great value and great potential in it. So centralizing it with Motorsport Australia, I think's a good thing for where the series is at now. Obviously, they were to leverage the Channel 7 deal, take some of the pressure off ARG. So I think it's positive in terms of where we're at. It's a consolidation year. But there's some good things going. So I think if we can keep this package together, keeping the GT cars, building some open wheels, you've got touring cars. And then, I think it's a really good mix. And I think you can grow from it.
It is a good mix of categories just this weekend alone. Obviously, you've got the Formula Open production cars, TCR, Trans Am.
Yeah, I'd forgotten actually. Well, I hadn't forgotten, but I didn't mention Trans Am there as well. Yeah, like those, each time those Trans Am cars go on track, like people sit up and take notice. So, yeah, I think there's great diversity. There's different types of cars. There's different sounds cars. It's and it is unique. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's another show in Australia that provides that much diversity of racing categories.
No, especially in terms of like the variety of cars in each race.
So it should
be good. Just hopefully some sunny skies, not the rain we saw in 2022 at Sandown.
Yeah, exactly. I used that. Yeah, remember 2022? There was so much rain in all those events from the Bend to Sandown, and then it followed us to the Bathurst International that weekend. Like that. That was insane. I used to enjoy a bit of a wet racing weekend because it mix up the grid and different things. But yeah, that was too much rain
Yeah.
consecutively. So
All right, so at the start of the year, what if you had three wishes for TCR this year, what would you hope for? What would you do? What do you want to see happen?
20 domestic cars by the end of the year. That's a net gain of five. So maybe it's a little bit ambitious, but let's target that. I think that's a good place for the series to get.
It is, especially when you consider 18 months ago, we had 22 cars on the grid at Eastern Creek for round four of the 2022 series. So it was a shame how much it dropped so quick, but we can always build it back up.
Yeah, and as you said, there's cars. So if we get those supply issues sorted, I think that's achievable. And obviously, secondly, just the obviously, well, the World Tour locked in, and it's been well supported with that. But I'd love to see, as I said before, Josh Buchan, Bhagwana, Aaron Cameron, even Will Brown, if you possibly can. As the guys who showed so well in the World Tour rounds last year can get to, a Macau or a series, because I just think that kind of taking the Australian series off our shores and putting those guys in races would be really good. And then finally, as you touched on before, just changing up some of those Bathurst race formats. Obviously, long-term goal, not 2024. But I think being able to get to a potential two car endurance race would be great for the series. But obviously we need to progressively get there. That's not something that can happen this year. But yeah, if we can with the World Tour increase those race distances up to what it was in 22, those 2022 around those 21 lap races, I think that'd be great value add. And then incrementally we can increase those from there.
And it was said by Marcello Lotti last year. He did mention that he would like to at some point see an endurance race in the TCR World Tour. So maybe in time the planned Bathurst 500 for 2020 may come back.
Yeah, exactly. That's insane. Like I'm saying, like just steady progress and you're getting there. So yeah, that would be really encouraging.
My three wishes. First of all, the British TCR series has started up a Gen 1 Cup for the older sort of Gen 1 TCR cars. And Marcello Lotti's talked about introducing it into TCR regulations officially. So I'd like to see Australia jump on that and introduce, I guess you'd call it like a privateer's cup or so to speak, for some of the older cars, for the Golfs, for the Alphas, for the cars that are sort of orphaned a bit. Maybe that might be a way to get people to drag the older cars out.
Yeah, no, I anything that can attract the older cars. I read in that article too that the Subarus have gone back to England. But
Yeah.
yeah, you're right. Like with this new wave of Peugeots coming, there's going to be at least four, if not more, Peugeots just that will be, dated. So yeah, if there's a privateer cup or something like that that can get those cars back out, then yeah, that's a great idea.
Also, I'd love to see a way that we get Sweeney and Clementi back on the grid, especially Clementi, because him and the team weathered the COVID dramas and then weathered the Stan TV deal. And now we've come out the other side, heading in with the new Channel 7 deal, and he hasn't been able to get the funding together for this year. I think that's a
Yeah.
real shame.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, it's cruel to get through that. But John, I mean, he put such good performances in last year too. Two wins. So yeah, it's fingers crossed something can come his way and get him back out in the grid.
And I'm basically my third one. I'm with you on the Bathurst races. Can we get the longer Bathurst races back for the end of the year? 11 laps wasn't enough, especially when there's a 5 lap safety car.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of just that really took the edge off. Yeah, no, that's there you go. We'll do some lobbying because I haven't seen any formats announced for that now. But yeah, and if Lottie's on board with it too, and there's not some requirement to be some uniform approach, then yeah, let's do it. And John, I mean, if there's some weird way that 21 can't be done because of a Lincoln Co fuel, which I think is highly unlikely, just
Oh,
push it.
that was just a joke. That was the only reason I could think of.
Well, that doesn't say too. That's the only variable, isn't it? But then, if we can only get 18 laps, just whatever the maximum is, just do it. So.
And if well, actually, I'll add a fourth one. If Dylan O'Keefe is only jumping in for the first round and not for the full season, can we just get someone like Ian Ellershay to guest in the car for the rest of the season?
That would be cool. Yeah, they could lean on that whole Lincoln Co. Because they're selling Lincoln Cos here now too. So.
Well, they need to get the latest model cars out here then.
Yeah.
You know,
So.
we had four of them out here in December or November. Should have just left them here.
Yeah, exactly.
Just before go that was a professional team. That was an impressive team, the Cyan Racing Lincoln Co team.
I was like, I snooped around their garage for quite a while. When to be fair, they were very accommodating. They weren't trying to push you out. But yeah, that was one of the slickest units that we've seen. And even the fact that they were what the four cars that we saw them race at Bathurst were not the four cars they raced at Macau because
No.
they were different ships and they were different. Yeah,
Well,
just
it was a week later. There was no way the car. Well,
yeah.
all no, none of those nine or
Yeah,
ten,
which mess, yeah.
well, tour cars. None of them were racing the next weekend. So, yeah, it's a pity more of them didn't stay here. At
Yeah,
least
that's a good point.
the Girolami car did.
Yeah, exactly. That's good on Honda in for that one too. But yeah, no, that sign racing that was exceptional.
All right, that's about where we'll leave it, I think, in the preview for race one. Have you got a winner for the weekend?
I'm going to go Tony D'Alberto to win this weekend, but obviously Clay Richards to put in a good show in the Cupra.
I'm going to go Buchan. I think it's not really a step down going back to the hatch based on how Sweeney went last year. And in terms of surprise, Ryan Kasha. I think hopefully he'll be able to get stuck in.
Yep,
But
no, on debut, should be good.
good to be back. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. I'll see you next time.
We'll be back very soon on the next episode of Motor Racing Passion. Bye for now.